really understand what the Buddha meant.
Especially when it comes to the understanding of non-self. So there's a need for the development of these two, sati and samadhi, which are two of the five spiritual faculties. So tonight, Brother Teo will share with us his knowledge. And as usual, we'll just observe, take the precepts, observe the precepts, take refuge in the triple jam. All right, before he starts. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata Veeramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Adinadana Veeramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Kamesu Micchacara Veeramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Mosavada Veeramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Sura Meraya Majapamadatana Veeramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay. Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So once again, we meet. But this time is, I think, after more than 1 month, almost 1 over month. Because November, we don't have, October, we don't have a class. October month is normally very busy. So I purposely choose an earlier date for November so that it's not too long. Okay, tonight's topic is something that is quite interesting. I received this topic from Brother Gan. The original title was slightly different. He put the importance of sati and samatha in developing Vipassana meditation in cultivation. Then I realized the title was not so correct. So that's why I say I will do a slight modification to the title. So you look at the whiteboard, you will know. It should be importance of sati and samadhi. Samadhi is not samatha. Samadhi is different. Samadhi. Samatha is actually concentration, absorption, focusing of mind. Whereas Samadhi is a free mind, but collected and unwavering. So it should be importance of Sati and Samadhi in developing the Vipassana meditation in cultivation. Just like what Brother Te has pointed out, Sati and Samadhi are two of the five very important spiritual faculties that the Buddha spoke about. According to Sakyamuni Buddha, or Lord Buddha, he said our mind states are very important to develop this meditation and to understand his spiritual teaching. We need to cultivate the five spiritual faculties. And they are called spiritual faculties because it can enable you to understand spiritual teaching. So these five spiritual faculties, I believe, most of us are familiar. Huh? What are they? Let's go through. What are they? First one is what? The five spiritual faculties. First one is Sada. Sada is faith. Sorry. Where is the duster? Oh, it's over there. Can somebody get it for me? Yeah. Thank you. Right there. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. So this Sada is a Pali word. In English, they often translate it as faith. Faith or confidence. Confident in what? Confident or faith in what? In? The Buddha and his teaching. Very good. In the Buddha and his teaching. His teaching is also called the Dhamma. So when you have faith in him and his teaching, through knowing how special a being he is. He is not only the wisest, he is also the most virtuous living being ever to be born. And to have such a great being to be your teacher, you will have a lot of faith and gratitude and respect for him. That's why you develop this stability of faith, of confidence in him and his teaching, which can allow you to become enlightened. It can liberate your mind so that you don't have to suffer anymore. And you can always have this wisdom or understanding born of this teaching, which is the Buddha Dhamma, to set your mind free so that you are always peaceful, happy, without any problems in life, no matter what happens. And when you have this confidence, your mind becomes very calm, very composed. This mind state is very conducive for you to develop understanding of his teaching. It's just like you respect your teacher or lecturer. Then you have faith in him. Then you will listen attentively. Then your mind state becomes different because there is no doubt. Doubt is the opposite of faith or confidence. So when you have faith and confidence, you do no doubt. That's why you will listen attentively. Then you can understand because you respect him. He is a very unique being and his teaching is very, very special. Can bring about enlightenment in the here and now. Full comprehension of life. When you understand life, you know how to live life. And when you know how to live life, you can live life to the fullest. Life become meaningful, wonderful. Then the second spiritual faculty is, in Pali is called virya. What is virya? Virya, you translate as what? is not effort. A lot of people use the word effort, actually it's wrong. Because under Noble Eightfold Path, right effort, the Pali word is different. Right effort is called Sama Vayama. Vayama is effort, where thought is involved. But in this case, it's not effort. Virya is a type of spiritual zeal, Z-E-A-L, or tenacity. To walk this way. To walk this Dhamma way. Means to cultivate his teaching, to develop the wisdom. That's how you walk the path of Dhamma. And this is a type of energy, zeal, tenacity. Because when you understand who the Buddha is, you have great faith. Then when you understand that not only he is so wonderful a being, fully enlightened, perfect in virtue and wisdom, his teaching can also bring forth enlightenment in the here and the now and transform living being. Character-wise, personality-wise, to become a worthy one or enlightened being that is worthy of respect, offering, and all the other things. So all this will drive you to cultivate because you see the importance of this teaching. You see the importance of how it can transform your life and develop the understanding and wisdom so that you don't have to suffer again. Okay? So this is a spiritual zeal or tenacity or a type of energy that will drive you to cultivate. It's not like consciously with the thought, use right effort to cultivate. No. It is a type of thing that drives you because you see the importance of it. It becomes like something very important and you really want to do it because there is this understanding behind. They call it the driving force. Like when you see the importance of success, you have to work very hard towards it, either study or commit yourself to it. So that one develops the understanding and it drives you. Some people call it passion. When you have passion in what you do, you like what you do, because you see the importance of it, then it will drive you. That passion towards that thing will drive you. And you will do it well. So this spiritual zeal is the second spiritual faculty. Then the third one is sati. What is sati? Sati. A lot of people translate it as mindfulness. But what does it mean? Very few people understand what this word is. Mindfulness. Mind in fullness. Full of what? You never ask. If full of thought, then it's not sati. It's heedlessness. But if it's mind in fullness, without thought, then it is sati, mindfulness. That's why mind in fullness, not thinking. It's fully aware. So this is actually awareness before the knowing. Awareness before the knowing. And the fourth spiritual faculty is samadhi. Now this samadhi is not concentration. This is the collected and unwavering mind. Collected and unwavering mind. When you have this mind, especially these two spiritual faculty. Yeah? These are the five spiritual faculty that can allow you to understand spiritual teaching. So when you have sati and samadhi, your mind is different because your mind is just fully aware, no thinking, no thought. No thought means what? There is clarity, understand? Clarity. Then at the moment of sense experience, you have samadhi, which means your mind is collected and unwavering. Not only there is clarity, it does not stir, it does not react, it does not waver. It's collected, peaceful. That's why it can see things as they are. Can allow you to see things as they are. See things as they are. Leading to what? Leading to? Yeah? When you can see things as they are, you will understand the truth, isn't it? True or not? Leading to what? Wisdom, which is Panya, the fifth spiritual faculty. Wisdom. That's why these five are very important spiritual faculties or mind state that you need to cultivate to develop the spiritual mind to allow you to understand spiritual teaching and to develop the meditation. Without these five, the Buddha said the opposite five, he called it the mental hindrance. They will arise. And this mental hindrance we all have gone through many times. They are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, sleepiness of mind, then restlessness of mind. Then the last one is doubt. And you realize the spiritual faculty counters the five hindrances. Why are they called mental hindrances? They are called mental hindrances because they are mind state that will hinder your mind from becoming peaceful, from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, so that you will not become heedless. Yeah. So this is a very important understanding. The five mental hindrances, without the spiritual faculty, they will arise. That's why all of Puttajana, unenlightened beings, who has not trained their mind, who has not developed the spiritual faculty, they will become heedless. The reason being, they have mental hindrance. Mental hindrance born of wrong view, born of delusion, especially self-delusion, sakkaya ditti, that condition you to believe that you exist as a human being and that you are real. And this is where the egoic mind condition, the personality, the atta, you believe you are real, you exist. And this will condition you to become selfish, possessive, develop all the craving, the attachment, the clinging, where you think you can own things, you can have things. And the worst is because you think you are real, when things don't go your way, you can become angry, unhappy, emotional. Then through selfishness, you develop envy and jealousy and all the negative mind state. Then when you don't understand what is going on, there is fear, there is worry, there is anxiety, your mind becomes restless. That's why people enter depression. They develop mental fear, mental suffering, worry, anxiety, leading to all the sorrow and lamentation. All of this the Buddha called mental suffering. So these are the fundamental aspects of the teaching that you have to understand. That's why today's topic, we focus on these two, sati and samadhi, out of the five spiritual faculty. this tool, the moment you develop it, it will develop the last spiritual faculty of wisdom. Like I said, when you have sati and samadhi, you don't think. Your mind is not lost in thought, not heedless, not preoccupied with what you think. And you are not emotional. The mind does not stir because you have samadhi, collectedness, and the unwavering mind. And this one will allow you to see things as they are. Not according to what your brain tells you, your memory, your belief system, your conditioning, your habitual tendency. That's why when you see things according to memory or acting according to memory, you are not acting at all. Because you are acting based on your accumulated experiences, which could be your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your insecurity, your selfishness, your emotional negativity, and all those things. So when you act according to memory, you are not acting at all. You are not seeing things as they are, because you are labeling it with words, with concept. Then through your wrong view, through your conditioning, you label it and react and stir your mind. That's why in the midst of life, every moment of sense experience, you arise the mental hindrance, especially the first two, like and dislike. Then when you violate your precepts, you develop problems. Then you worry about your problem. When there is worry, there is fear, there is anxiety. That's why your mind becomes restless. That's why it's a hindrance. Then when you're not sure, you have doubt because you lack faith. That's why with sati, you don't think. You don't label. You don't create concept. You don't allow your mind to interfere. You can see things as they are. The reality is without word, without concept. When there is no word, there is no concept, no idea, no emotion. Because without word, your mind cannot conceptualize anything. Then your views and opinion cannot move. But the moment you conceptualize, perceive it with memory and conditioning, then your habitual tendency come in to react. There's a like and dislike, sensual desire and ill will, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. So these are the mental hindrance. You keep on arising then with every moment of sense experience when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactile feel something, or you recall something. What happened? Yeah? Your mind was stirred, isn't it? Because you created them through delusion. That's why the first two links of the dependent origination, the Buddha said, dependent or ignorant, avijja. It conditioned what? Huh? Avijja paccaya sankara. Sankara is what? Mental activity, thinking. That's why this first two links of dependent origination, the 12 link, is very powerful, mental activity. And this is the one that make you heedless, cause you to be lost in thought, think a lot. That's why the heedless think a lot. They are constantly lost in thought. They are never mindful, never with the moment, never aware. This one is mental activity. So dependent on ignorant delusion because you don't understand. One thing to know, one thing to experience, you start to create thought. Then you cling and attach to what you think. That's why the whole dependent origination sets in. Then finally, you develop attachment that conditions your mental suffering. And it is because of your lack of this understanding of dependent origination. You didn't see it in the meditation. You didn't contemplate deep enough to understand all this. Then you deludedly believe that the human being is real. You believe that this human being with a physical form and a consciousness trapped inside is real. So this human being is actually not what you think. This is the consciousness part. consciousness. This is the physical body. Physical body. Or physical form. And this is what the Buddha called mind. Consciousness is mind. That's why we are the form and mind. So, consciousness got four aggregates. That's why you combine this four plus one. You have the five aggregates of form and mind. And this one is not you, the Buddha said. In your meditation, you have to realize this. You have to awaken to this. This one is dependent, originating, karmically conditional for you to come to this world, to live, to experience, to go through the law of nature that governs life and existence. And the primary one is the law of karma. You reap what you sow. You are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. That's why this is what the Buddha advised the monk and cultivator. Every day you must reflect and contemplate. The first four relate to the first noble truth reality. It's mainly about this physical body being made of element, no knowing. That's why it's of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. For he has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. Because they are elements that goes the way of nature. They are not real. They are not you. They are dependent originating, condition arising. Then number four is about everything that you think you own. Your loved ones, your possession, your wealth, your career, your reputation, whatever. When condition is there, they arise. And it's like you own them. But when condition is to be, it will separate from you. That's why separation is a reality. When you don't understand that you deliberately cling to your loved ones, your possession, your wealth, then when condition is to be and when they separate, or when your breath stops, it also separates from you, then human being, living being who don't have the understanding, they will become afflicted, miserable. Then the fifth one, of course, is the law of karma. Then the next one is law of mind, the 12-link dependent origination. How your mind functions, 12-link, paticca-samuppada, or dependent origination. How you function as a human being. This one, you have to see it through the meditation. So, coming back to today's title, the reason why I say this topic is very unique is you have to understand the importance of sati and samadhi in developing the vipassana meditation in cultivation. So now we focus on the other word, vipassana. What is this word, vipassana? Like Brother Tay just now in the introduction, he mentioned, you have to see the non-self nature of this form and mind. That this is not you. That's why this meditation is to allow you to see that. That's why it's called vipassana meditation. So this word vipassana, we have to go into it. It's formed from two words, vi and passana. What is this word vi? Vi. What does it mean? Three universal characteristics. So this one denotes the three universal characteristics. And what are they? Yes, very good. Three universal characteristics. Anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Anicca, dukkha, and anatta. What does it mean? Anicca means impermanent. These are universal characteristics. Means it's inherent in all things, in all phenomena, impermanence. Because they are dependent, originating, condition arising. That's why they have this universal characteristics of impermanence. Then it brings about suffering, unsatisfactoriness. Why? Suffering or unsatisfactoriness. Unsatisfactoriness. Because it's dependent originating. It keep on changing. It's in a state of flux, understand? It cannot remain the same. Whatever good mind state, happy state, because the universal characteristics of impermanent is dependent originating, condition arising, dependent on condition, it will be this way. So when condition goes your way, you become happy. But later on, condition will change. Your external condition affects you. Then when it changes, the happy state can become negative. Then it will afflict you. That's why it brings about unsatisfactoriness, suffering. It can never remain the same. I want this body to be forever young. Don't get old, don't get sick, and don't die. Impossible. But this one goes the way of nature. Sooner or later, as you go through life, you experience old age, sickness, and death. The chair, same. All phenomena, they arise dependent on condition. When condition ceases to be, it ceases. That's why there is separation. Death of loved one. Separation of the form from what you think you own. So all this shows to you clearly, because things are impermanent, it will lead to suffering. It's unsatisfactory. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity that you can call, this is me, this is I. Therefore, this one can own everything. This can be mine. That's why it's anatta. Non-self nature. Non-self. Nature. And because it's impermanent, it's also called empty nature. Empty nature. Or existence. Because everything is in a state of flux, dependent originating, condition arising, and they are all mind-made consciousness. That's why it's not real, it's empty. Like I used to share with you all when I came here and delivered the talk on emptiness. We can never deny that we were born, maybe during our birthday. And until now, most of you are not young. Maybe some are 40 plus, 50 plus, 60 plus, some even 70 plus. You cannot deny that you have lived all these years or period. But the question is, now I ask you, is it real? All those moments that you have experienced and lived, what happened to them? Huh? What happened to them? Huh? It's dead and gone, isn't it? You can only recall them through memory, isn't it? How real can it be? It's just a thought, memory. That's why it's empty nature of existence. That's why the Mandarin Mahayana side have this good say. Those who understand Mandarin, you will understand. He say, as a human being, we are born into this world. That's why he say, we came empty. Lai e kong. Then when you die, what happens? You also go empty. You cannot take along anything. nothing belongs to you, except maybe the law of karma you inherit. But it's not tangible. You cannot take along. So there's a qi, a kong. You are born into this world empty. When you leave this world, you are also empty. So why are you deceived and deluded by this? Then why do you grieve in between over emptiness? You understand? Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Namo si zu, he bi ku ku wei kong, liu lei ne? You understand? Then you will not grasp, you will not cling, you will not be deceived. What do you get ultimately when you're about to die? You think your wife will follow you, your children will follow you, your wealth will follow you. Some of them are so deluded, they say, burn all my money so that I can receive them. Understand? Then he wants the worst. He wants all of those soldiers, everything to follow him. That's why he created the great Muslim. That's why you got the Ping Ma Yua. You go see and you can see them. He actually wants them to die with him, thinking that he will have the army in the next world or underworld. Living being can have such delusion and foolishness. So this is the part that I want you to understand. We stand for the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self or empty nature. Then what is this pasana? Pasana is what? Insight into. Insight into. This is pasana. Pasana is to insight into. So vipassana is to insight into the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self. Then you will have the wisdom to understand that this is not me. And this one is impermanent, subject to birth and death. And this one is karmically conditioned for you to come to this world. Every life, your nature comes, there is this form and mind, which we call one segment of your life. You can understand? According to the Buddha, living being has been born and die, born and die, born and die. For countless aeons of birth and death, infinity, aeons of birth and death. Each and every life that you come, every form and mind, are you the same? Are you the same? This life you're born as a human being. Maybe previous life, not so pleasant. Maybe animal life, hell life, hungry ghost, beta, or animals, or demons. Or sometimes maybe you're more lucky, devas, brahmas, the 31 plane. And each and every of this segmented life that you come through the law of karma is not you. You can follow. Can you follow that? Otherwise, when you become a dog, is that dog you? Then you become a human being. Is that human being also you? Of course, when you are deluded, before you become enlightened, sure, brother, show me. I got a name, My parents give birth to me, I want to talk, I talk. I want to do anything I can, You say this is not me. And then? So many of you, which one is you? When you are devas, when you are hungry ghost, peta, which one is you? You have been going round, traveler in space of time, space and time, for eternity, samsara. You keep on taking birth and die, taking birth and die. So which one is you? The Buddha said, none of them are you. They are all delusion, karmically conditioned out through consciousness, through the law of karma. That's why you have to awaken to this, that this is not you. Do not attach and do not cling. This is not you. So, do not attach. Do not cling. Do not be deceived. Deceive, huh? How to spell? Correct or not? Yeah? Correct, that is it. Yeah. So the basis of the Buddhist teaching and meditation is to develop this. That's why the meditation, people always talk about vipassana. But the problem with the Buddhist community is they don't understand this word. Excuse me. Huh? I remember during the early days, when you teach meditation, the first thing you know what the yogi want to do. Yeah? What do you teach? Vipassana or samatha? If you say not vipassana, they are not interested. You realize that. Then others will come and ask you, what method, what technique, you follow which teacher? That is the gullible state of all this so-called cultivator. Because they don't understand what is it that they are trying to look for. What is the meditation that the Buddha is trying to teach you? The Buddha actually teach the Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of his teaching. And he got no such thing as vipassana or what. But within the teaching, he has the three characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self. That's why this word was created. You have to insight into the reality, the truth, based insight into all phenomena to realize their three universal characteristics. And there are three types of phenomena in this universe. You have your physical phenomena, mental phenomena, and nature's phenomena. Like I used to say, truth is everywhere, why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. All of physical, mental, and nature's phenomena, they are in the midst of life and existence. These are universal characteristics, truth. Why can't you see? That's why you need sati and samadhi to see. The direct seeing, jnana dasana, direct knowledge and vision of the reality, not through your brain, your memory. That's why this is what you need to develop the meditation. So after you understand what vipassana is, then we will go into the topic proper. Importance of sati and samadhi in developing this vipassana meditation. Like I explained, without sati, without samadhi, you are not ready. Because sati and samadhi can allow you to see things as they are, leading to wisdom, which is panya, insight, knowledges, to awaken you to these three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self. Then according to the Buddha, if you attach and cling to this five aggregate of form and mind, he called it the upadana khandas, the five aggregates of grasping, then you will develop suffering. That's why the final summary says, in short, the Buddha said, it is due to your self-delusion that conditions you to attach and cling and hold on to this five aggregate of form and mind, namarupang, pancha, upadana khandas, thinking that is real, is you, that is the cause of suffering. That's why upadana khandas, the five grasping aggregate, are suffering. So the whole of meditation centers on this. And you can develop the training of the mind to have this sati and samadhi. Then you can insight into the three universal characteristics to develop what they call vipassana. So vipassana is not a method, it's not a technique. is an awakening that arises to the direct see. That's why in the salutation to the Dhamma, which is the second of the triple gem, what did the Buddha describe? Yeah? When you chant the salutation to the Dhamma, you want to understand what constitutes the Dhamma. That's how the Buddha defined it. He said, Svakato Bhagavata Dhammo. What does that mean? Yeah? Svakato. Well expounded is the teaching, is the Dhamma by the Buddha. That's why Svakato Bhagavato Dhammo. This Bhagavato is the Buddha. Yeah. Svakato Bhagavata Dhammo. Yeah. Then, the next characteristics of Dhamma is what? This Dhamma is what? Every day you chant also you cannot remember. Yeah, now chant together. Maybe chant together like school song or national song, you can remember. Svakato Bhagavata Dhammo. Then? Sanditiko, akaliko, ehipasiko, opanayiko, pachetang, veditabo, vinohiti. What does it mean? That's why the Buddha wants you to, through the puja, develop the contemplative understanding of what constitutes the Buddha, what constitutes the Dhamma, what constitutes the Sangha. But you're supposed to take refuge in them, you know. You don't even understand what they are. Then what refuge are you taking? That's why the Buddha has the nine great virtues, iti peso bhagava arahang. You have to understand them. You have to reflect, contemplate, develop the understanding so that your faith is very strong, unshakable. Then the Dhamma, so that you understand how wonderful, how special this teaching is. How it can transform you and make you enlightened. So sanditiko is what? This Dhamma has this universal character, sorry, this uniqueness of sanditiko. Means it can be realized in the here and the now. No need to wait till death like other religion. They promise you eternal heaven, kingdom of God, but you must die first. Understand? After you die, what happens? If let's say that one is not the true religion, you don't end up in the kingdom of God. You go somewhere else according to law of karma. Then what happened? Too late to regret. Understand? But this one different. You don't have to wait till death to realize this enlightenment. That's why it's called sanditiko. Can be realized in the here and the now before you die. Then the next one is what? We just chant. Akaliko. What is akaliko? This Dhamma is timeless, beyond thought, beyond time. So if you don't have sati and samadhi to see things as they are without thought, without the psychological movement of mind and thought, then how can it be akaliko? That's why this one is an awakening, a realization. It's not a mind state. It's not fantastic meditation state. It's not calmness and all those things. You can follow. Then after that is what? This Dhamma is ehipasiko is what? It can stand up to investigation. You can investigate into it using your own mind. But you must have mindfulness. That's why the first factor of enlightenment is sati, mindfulness. Again, this spiritual faculty. Then only you can investigate. But when you are mindful, you are aware without thought, you have clarity. That's why you can see clearly. Then you can investigate into everything that the Buddha teach, like the Four Noble Truths. He said this is suffering. You go through the eight conditions, the eight reality, whether it's really lead to suffering or not, when you don't have wisdom. Then he said the cause is craving, born of self-delusion. You check. Then the final summary, that attachment to the five aggregate of form and mind is suffering. So you need to contemplate, reflect, and inquire. Why did the Buddha say that? How can I understand? To understand, you must understand what this five aggregate of form and mind is. The human being, the two aspects. That's why all this has to go in. Then only there is understanding. Then you can also put Dhammapada verse 1 to test. The Buddha said, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So if you are heedless, you do not take care of mind, you do not train this mind, you will act, speak, and think with a heedless mind, a deluded mind, that will have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then suffering will follow you, like the hood that follow the wheel of the oxen's drive. So Dhammapada was one tell you clearly, suffering will follow you if you are heedless. Then the complementary verse, verse 2, again the Buddha says, since our mind is so important, mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So what must you do? We have to train our mind. We have to be heedful. That's why we develop sati, clarity of mind. Then when we act, speak, and think with a heedful mind, with clarity, with mindfulness, so that the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion is not there, then happiness will follow you, the Buddha said, like your shadow that never leaves you. You can put it to test. Without the evil root, you are very peaceful. You are very happy. You have a lot of joy, a lot of calmness, a lot of happiness. That's why this is what the Dhamma is all about. It stand up to investigation. Then the dependent origination, he said, how you function as a human being, you can put it to test. Then the five mental hindrance that he explained, the five spiritual faculty. Then the evil roots, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. You must understand this essential Dhamma. What constitutes evil? Why did the Buddha say greed, hatred, and delusion constitute evil? When you have them in your heart, it makes you evil. Because these are the roots of all evil. That's why you must not have selfishness. You must not have greed, lust, craving, anger, hatred, envy, jealousy. These are all evil roots. Roots of all evil make you evil, cause your karma to fall. That's why the advice of the Buddha come about. You have to avoid all evil. How to do it? Keep your precept. But those who violate their precept commits evil. Then cultivate goodness, wholesomeness. That's why Noble Eightfold Path. From right view, you cultivate right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then the four right effort to purify your thought. Then meditate. Purify your mind. How to purify? You have to have sati and samadhi and the spiritual faculty to overcome the mental hindrance. Then the mind has this spiritual faculty which will enable you to understand spiritual teaching. Develop the meditation so that you can silence your mind. When you are in sati and samadhi, you are silent without thought. This is what they call the silent mind, the meditative mind. Then you will develop the tranquility or stillness of mind, which is sparsity, the fifth enlightenment factor. Then together with samadhi, you will develop wisdom that make your mind equanimous. They say upeka, born of wisdom, is the real upeka. Yeah, the seventh or last of the seven factors of enlightenment. So this is what the whole of the teaching is all about. When you understand, you know how to develop them. There is one more part that I need to explain to you. Yeah? You remember at the age of 29, why did the Buddha left the palace to seek out the Dhamma for enlightenment? Why? He saw the... What did he saw? He saw the four signs, isn't it? What are they? Old age, sickness, and death. Then a holy man, a samana. Why did he just go for when he saw this four signs? I ask you, you have seen this four signs. Why can't you like awaken and just want to go for? Or determine, just want to go for? Because to him, he is very different. He has cultivated from the past before. So when he went out of the palace with his attendant, when he saw this foresight, he asked the attendant, how come this human being is like that? So fragile, so weak, like so miserable. The attendant said, this is an old man. The Buddha cannot understand. No. He said, what do you mean by an old man? Then the attendant said, each and every one of us will one day become like him. So old, so weak, so fragile. Then he got a shock of his life. No. Means I have a problem, understand? No? Means what the father has given him all the beautiful four type of palace of the four seasons, all the beautiful music, all of the beautiful training, and even what they call the food, the joy, the happiness within the palace. Then even the games, the war, not really war, the hunting and the skill, the fighting and all those things. All this got no more meaning because he said, I will have a problem. One day this body will become like this old man, sick man. So fragile, so weak, so full of misery, suffering. Then when he saw the diseased man, it's worse. You know, when you are in traumatic disease or very severe suffering due to disease, there is so much pain. There is so much fear, fear of death, fear of the intolerable pain, mental and physical. Then sometimes that disease can be very, very difficult, especially during the olden days. Medical science was not so advanced, like appendicitis, all those things. They can be very traumatic. Then stroke and all those things, heart attack. People don't understand. But the worst are those that keep you and don't cause you to die immediately. That type of traumatic disease, like soldier being wounded, then the wound becomes septic. Then they develop complication, like appendicitis and all those things. Then inside got problem. Indigestion, stomach ache, bowels, and all those things. Then when they are pricked by nails, cut by glasses, and all those things. So all this can be very traumatic. Then he realized he still has problem despite what he had. Life got no meaning. When it comes to all his sickness and pending death, he got no answer. That's why he go for. He saw the Samana, a holy man, which is so calm, so serene. He believed this is the way to find the answer to life problem. That's why the realities of life and existence, the Buddha explained under the First Noble Truth, is that wherever there is birth, there will be old age, sickness, and death. And this is the answer he wants. Of course, he also knew later there will be separation and all those things. All the other First Noble Truth reality, he knew can cause a lot of suffering. And that suffering comes about because he, all this while, don't understand that the five aggregate of form and mind or the human form and mind is not him. That's why he has problem. He worry about this body getting old, getting sick and die, but he think this one is he. He also cling on to the consciousness, believing that the mind is real. There is a person inside there. There is a thinker behind the thought. There is a consciousness which is the mind that has an entity that has craving, desire, ambition and all those things. So this is the cause of suffering. That's why when he go for and sick for 6 years, what happened to him? He couldn't gain enlightenment. He follow all the teacher and what they teach him. Austere meditation. He go the austere way, very, very strict, do a lot of meditation, a lot of sitting. Then they develop the mind until very powerful state, jhana, as option one-pointedness. Then despite what the teacher can do, Alara Udaka, who taught him, he equal them or even better than them. And yet he realized he's still not enlightened, because his basic question to overcome old age sickness and death is not answered. That's why he continued on his own. He doesn't want to join them. They even offer him equal status to teach, to become equal partner. Yeah. He refused. He walked away. Then when he walked away, he decided to eat, because he realized this is not the way. This is self-mortification, too extreme. Then when he decided to eat again, the five ascetics left him. They thought he not serious, but because of his parami. That's why he starts to develop the health. Then when he was more healthy on his own, he contemplated a lot, he reflected a lot. Then he recalled a childhood incident when he was very young, the harvesting festival. Then he realized that time he was well fed. He was well taken care of, and the mind state was very peaceful, where as a child, no complicated thinking. Then he can enter the first jhana very easily. And first jhana is a normal state of mind in calmness, in silence, which has sati or mindfulness. When there is no thought, like a baby, a child, little or no thought, that's why he enter that calmness. But he still can reflect, can contemplate. He still has joy, happiness. He can witness the harvesting and harvesting. That's why he has clear comprehension of what is going on. He's not in one-pointedness or focusing his option. Then he realized maybe that is the way to develop wisdom, understanding. That's why he went into that meditation that night underneath the Bodhi tree after he received the milk rice from Sujata. Then according to the sutta, you all can recall that the first wash, what did he do? He recollected past life, you remember? Because he cultivated before. Then he starts to reflect, contemplate, and inquire. There was clear comprehension of all those recollections of past life. Then he saw one life, two life, three life, until hundreds of thousands of life, until many, many countless life. Then he realized all this is not him. And every life he realized, these are the things. He was born into this family with this name. Then he did this. And because of this, he become conditioned into the next life. That's why he is born as what and what and what. Then he realized all this is dependent origination, condition arising, causal phenomenon, following nature's law, law of karma. You reap what you sow. Do good begets good. Do evil begets evil. That's why he realized this form of mind is born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. He didn't sit there and become like a statue, understand? In deep jhana or samadhi. No. He reflected, he contemplated, and then he realized all this teaching. That's why he can teach you the Buddha Dhamma. And also because of his past cultivation and perfection, he starts to silence his mind and he connects. Then when he connects, he understands everything. It's wisdom that free, not all the fantastic meditation, mind state, not all the method, technique. That's why when he come out to teach, he just teach the four foundations of mindfulness, the handful of leaves, four noble truths leading to the four foundations of mindfulness. And what is the four foundation of mindfulness? He said you need to train your mind to have this quality of mind, sati, mindfulness. That's why the first category of cultivation under Kaya Nupassana, the first foundation is anapanasati. Train your mind to have mindfulness of the in and out breath. The breath is part of your kaya. You develop mindfulness over the in and out breath, like the Buddha said, breathing in, aware, breathing out, aware, no thought. The breath and the mind move as one. in perfect harmony and synchrony. Then you will realize the silent mind, that's the T, the mindfulness. When you are mindful without thought, you experience piti. Your mind state becomes beautiful, tranquil, calm. That's why you have spiritual joy, spiritual calmness. Then you continue to relax into it. Then it becomes sukha. Then later on, when you continue to relax into it, sukha will become tranquility, stillness of mind, paucity. That is the silent mind. That is the true mind. That is the meditative mind. And that is the one that can allow you to see things as they are, developing into samadhi, awakening. Then after you have sati, born of anapanasati training, after that, don't do any more sitting. What is the next category of cultivation under kayanupasana? Yeah? After anapanasati, mindfulness of the four posture, very good. Standing aware, sitting aware, walking aware, lying down aware. Then the third category is what? Connect all the movement and develop not only mindfulness. This time is sati sampajana, clearly comprehending what is going on. That's why you can recollect, you can reflect, you can contemplate, and you can understand. That's why once you have sati, you anchor it to the four posture, you stabilize it in the daily mindfulness, then you expand it over to all your activity, your connecting movement between the four posture. That's why the Buddha says, standing aware, looking forward aware, bending, turning, stretching, answering nature's call aware, wearing the shoulder cloth aware, everything you do aware. Why do you have to do that? It's because this is the training of the mind to be mindful, heedful, so that it's not lost in thought. So that in the midst of life, you are mindful, you are heedful. Otherwise, according to Dhammapada verse 21, the heedless are as if dead. You understand? If you go to retreat, serious meditation only, you are slightly mindful or more mindful, then the moment you are out of retreat, you go back to the same old way, heedless most of the time. Then the Buddha said the heedless are as if dead. So how can you meditate? How can you develop the enlightenment? There is no way. That's why the real cultivation is daily mindfulness, sati sampajana, mindfulness and yet clearly comprehending what is going on. That's how you develop wisdom, contemplative wisdom, second turning wisdom. Because when you clearly comprehending everything that is going on, that's why you will witness in the daily life how your mind stir, how anger come to be, how fear come to be, how emotion come to be. Dependent origination. How you function as a human being, how upon contact, due to ignorant contact, it creates mental activity. You become heedless, you think a lot. Without the spiritual faculty, you become like that. This is all Dhamma investigation. Dhamma vichaya. That's how you develop the faith. When you realize all the Buddha's teaching, you can investigate into it and they stand up to investigation, your faith becomes very strong. That's why the first factor of enlightenment is deep. Then the second factor of enlightenment is when you contemplate, reflect, and investigate into his teaching and it stand up to investigation. That is the characteristics of the Buddha's teaching. Then there is joy, there is faith. Then you drive yourself to cultivate. You develop the next spiritual faculty of virya. That's why virya is the third enlightenment factor. Then when virya is there, you will cultivate seriously. You will strive on with heedfulness, like the advice of the Buddha before his parinibbana. Then your sati will develop. Yeah, because that virya will drive you to cultivate sati. Then when sati comes, or stabilizes, piti will arise. That's why piti is the fourth enlightenment factor. That's how the enlightenment factor builds up. Then when piti is there, you continue to relax and silent. Then the silent mind, which is paucity, tranquility, stillness of mind, will arise. This is the fifth enlightenment factor. Then when you stabilize this in the midst of daily life, until this paucity is a part of you throughout the day, then it stabilizes in the samadhi, the sixth enlightenment factor. Then with sati and samadhi, the spiritual faculty of sati and samadhi, it will allow you to see things as they are and to insight in the phenomena and to develop the vipassana insight of the three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering, state, and nonsense. That's how you awaken. That's how meditation is to be done in the midst of life. Then later on, you can go into formal meditation to stabilize the sati and samadhi and the panya. Then you will realize cessation of form and mind, nibbana. That's how you become enlightened. So this is how the whole of the cultivation is to be understood and cultivated. That's why the topic is very meaningful. Importance of sati and samadhi to develop vipassana meditation in cultivation. Okay? So with this, I will end my sharing, so that you have more time for Q&A. Okay, thank you so much. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. While I have a drink. Okay. Anybody got any question or anything you want to add or share, you can. Today you got more time. I purposely end early, 9:45, so just nice. So at least you got 15 to 20 minutes. Can understand? Oh, very good. Can understand is very good. The next time when you meditate, you must meditate with understanding. You must understand what you are doing in the name of meditation. Don't be gullible. Don't be interested in method and technique. To tell you the truth, those who depend on method and technique, they are people who still have the mental hindrance. Understand? Their spiritual faculty are not developed yet. If they have developed their spiritual faculty, there is no mental hindrance. The moment you sit, you become very quiet, very peaceful, and very still. Yeah. Because your spiritual faculty overcome all the mental hindrance. When you have faith, what happens? You no more doubt, isn't it? The hindrance, mental hindrance, the last one, doubt, no more. Your mind become very composed, very calm. Then this faith will kickstart the virya. There is this spiritual zeal, tenacity to walk this way. The energy is very strong. You won't be sleepy. Understand? That's why sloth and torpor no more. Then this will drive you to cultivate, to develop mindfulness. Then when you pay respect to Triple Gem, body and mind as one, you no need to train in anapanasati. The four posture, you maintain daily mindfulness. Then sati sampajana, maintain daily mindfulness. Then this sati will develop. Of course, initially, before the spiritual faculties are there, you will have the mental hindrance disturbing you. That's why you have to go back into training, practice, to train the mundane mind so that it is not heedless, so that it is not lost in thought, so that it is not constantly thinking, so that this link, avijja paccaya sankhara, can be weakened. Avijja means wrong view. Do not understand the truth. Ignorance of the three right views. First one is law of karma. Second one is dependent origination. Third one is Dhamma itself, which is the Four Noble Truths. So when you don't have this understanding of the Buddha's teaching, the three right views, you will be deluded. You will have ignorance. That's why you think a lot, wanting to know. One thing to experience. you start to think. And when you think, you create mental activity. That's how you become heedless. And when you have mental activity and heedless, you got no mindfulness, no awareness. That's why you cannot have sati. That's why you are lost in thought. So in meditation, the reason why they give you a method and a technique, object of meditation, is to anchor your mind to the object of meditation so that it is not heedlessly thinking. Now you understand? The breathing, anchor your mind. If you are mindful of this in and out breath, you wouldn't think in there. The rising falling is the same. If you put your mind there and aware of this rising falling, you don't think in there. The purpose is to anchor the mind so that it does not become heedless, lost in thought, so that it can be mindful, be with the object of meditation. And that is the purpose of object of meditation. And they don't know, they don't understand, they never tell you that. And you become gullible. You just do, thinking that when you note all this, or anapanasati, you think you are meditating. And they somehow argue, this is vipassana, this is samatha. That's why when you don't understand, you get yourself entangled. But as you develop sati, you don't have any thinking, any thought. No thought means what? There is clarity, anasana. Then there is peacefulness of mind. And because there is no thought, there is no concept, no conditioning, no words to create any emotion or movement. That's why with sati, you are just aware, silent, clarity, mindful, not lost in thought. And this is how you meditate. That's why in the actual meditation, you go everywhere, they will teach you a method and a technique to anchor your mind. Then they will teach you a skillful means to decondition the heedless thinking. That's why sometimes they say you start with a mind sweeping method or mind scanning method. Yeah. But that is just a skillful means, yeah, to feel relaxed and to train your mind to be at the location you want it to be so that you are not heedlessly lost in thought and thinking. It is to train your mind to have sati. And this one, you don't have to do that. You already understood what sati is. But the moment you are silent, without thought, you are already in sati. That's why awareness before the knowing. Knowing means what? The aggregate of mind arises, your thinking, your perception, your emotion, your sankhara, your mental activity. All this has arisen. That's why you are lost in thought, no longer aware. So awareness before the knowing is silent without thought. That's why sati is just aware, body and mind as one, breath and mind as one. Walking, body and mind as one. Standing, body and mind as one. Attentive, inwardly, just aware. Then while you walk, body and mind as one, just aware. Sitting the same, lying down the same. Then all your movement and activity the same. Why must you think? But sometimes to live life, you have to arise the thought, understand not? You have to recognize people, you have to cognize people, you have to listen. But listen attentively, with clear comprehension, understand not? Not with fear, worry, anxiety, and excitement that is heedless. Not to stir your mind and react to what you hear and what you see. Understand that these are conditioning, belief system, views and opinion. They are not the truth, not the reality. That's why you have to straighten your view. Keep on straightening your view. When you understand things differently, when you see things as they are and awaken to the universal characteristics, you are not deceived. Then you start to reflect and contemplate. No wonder the Buddha said, this is not me. This is just a vehicle and a tool, karmically conditioned out for me to come to this world, for me to use it, to live life, to understand life, to cultivate, to develop all the virtue, wisdom, to be a blessing to all. So I use it. So this body and mind is like a vehicle. The body is like a vehicle to take you around. The mind is like a tool to help you to develop the understanding of life, to make you conscious, to make you aware, to allow you to know the world, to interact with the world, to animate into a conscious form and mind. So when you understand all this, then you realize this mind is like a tool, T-O-O-L, understand, tool. Like a knife, you use it for what? If it's a tool, you use it to cut fruits, cut veggie, do carving, shape things that you want to do with it. Understand? But if you use that knife to cut yourself, harm yourself, hurt yourself, and hit out at others, is that the right way to use your tool, the knife? Huh? It's definitely wrong with that. Only deluded people, heedless people do that, understand? How can you use that tool which is endowed by nature to you, the thought, to harm yourself, hurt yourself, and hit out at others? Do you know precisely a lot of human beings is doing that? You know how they use their thought to harm themselves, hurt themselves? They arise the wrong thought. They attach to things. They worry a lot. That's why they make themselves mentally miserable. They suffer so much. They think and think and think until they enter depression, until so much anger, hatred, jealousy, envy, fear, insecurity, misery. These are all wrong thoughts. Thoughts that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your misery, your grief. So when you understand that these are wrong thoughts, make you miserable, and when you hit out at others, get angry with others, become selfish and do all those evil things, you make others suffer and miserable too. Then the law of karma hit back, you reap what you sow. In future, people do all this back to you. That's why the Buddha teaches differently. He said you must use this thought to arise, the right thought, born of his Dhamma, the right view, so that you do not use this thought heedlessly to harm yourself, hurt yourself, make yourself miserable, and hit out at others. And that is the right way of using your thought. That's why he, under Noble Eightfold Path, the Buddha taught about right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. This is how you use your thought. Not to use it in the other way, which is so negative. You understand what the Buddha is trying to tell you? Yeah? Do you know that the thought is given to you by nature? You are endowed with this beautiful quality called mind or thought process that can make you happy, peaceful, generous, having the contentment, respect, generosity, gratitude. All these are the wholesome thought, right thought. But you never arise them. What do you arise? Angry thought, unhappy thought, selfish thought. Why this guy do this to me? I'm going to take revenge. You go and think of all this. These are all wrong thought. Make you angry, make you unhappy, make you violent, miserable. Why can't you have love, compassion? Understand that all of humanity is one. We share the same world, the same consciousness. If we destroy nature, nature destroys us. If we arise negative thought, law of karma hit back, we will reap what we sow. That's why if you plant the seed of evil, you reap the seed of the fruit of evil. You plant the seed of wholesomeness, you reap the fruit of wholesomeness. That's why the Buddha say, law of karma, you reap what you sow. Do good, begets good. Do evil, begets evil. Then why are you still not following this advice? To avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind, following the advice of the Buddha. And the teaching make it very clear. How do you avoid all evil? That's why every puja, you renew your precept, keep your precept. Why? People who break the precept, they are evil people, selfish people, deluded people. You can go and check. First precept. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. What does it mean? we undertake the training rule to abstain from what? Killing and causing harm to fellow living being. I ask you one question. Who will do that? Who will kill and cause harm to fellow living being? Yeah? Who? Selfish people, isn't it? Agree or not? If you are selfish, you dare to kill because of self-interest. Angry people, violent people, deluded people who are heedless and don't care. They will do this. They will break this precept. That's why people who break this precept, they have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, selfishness. That's why they are root of all evil. They will make you evil. Karmically, you will fall. Then you reap what you sow. Means what? The Buddha said. Because you plant the seed of evil, you cause suffering to fellow living beings when you kill them, when you harm them, then you make them miserable. So the fruition is, in future, you will become the victim. People will kill you, harm you, and make life miserable for you. And your DNA coding, upon birth, you will have short life, you will have disease, sickness, that lead to mental suffering. Because this is what you caused people in the past, without you knowing it, realizing it. And the nature's law just operates on its own. It's a very powerful law. That's why the Buddha asks us to reflect and contemplate every day. The fifth of the five daily contemplation. What did the Buddha say? We are all? We are all one. The fifth daily contemplation. Born of our karma. Heir to our karma. Conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. Karma plays such a great role in your life, you know. You are born of it. Heir to it. You inherit everything. And you are conditioned and supported by it every moment, every instant. You know? And you are what you are now. You cannot blame anybody. Because of your karma. If karma plays such a great role, almost 100% of your life depends on karma, you somehow don't want to take care of karma, then I wish you luck. Yeah. If you don't know this secret of life, you don't know how to live life, because you will continue to be heedless. You will continue to be selfish, greedy, and break all these precepts. And you think this can give you advantage. That's why through your selfishness and your greed, you think you can get things faster. You can use all the deceitful way, crooked way. And through this, you create a lot of karmic negativity and you reap what you sow. Then later on in future, when you become the victim, when you suffer, then you don't understand, you blame people. Why the government like that? Why my friend like that? Why my parent like that? Why my father and mother like that? Neglect me. They go and gamble. They don't take care of the family. They didn't do their responsibility. But you never check law of karma. In the past, you also like that. Never take care of your children. Neglect your family. You also heedlessly go late night, drink, gamble, and do all this funny thing. That's why you reap what you sow. You'll be born into a family where your parents will neglect you. Then when you cheat people, deceive people, take advantage of people, future life when you come, when there is condition, people will cheat you, take advantage of you, deceive you, and do all those things to you. Then when you are a boss, you don't take care of your staff, you don't feel for them, care for them, take advantage of them, scold them, torture them, torment them, harass them. In future, when you come, you will have bosses that do back the same thing to you. That's why management by fear and harassment. And all this is going to come, I tell you. That's why when you have the Dhamma, you cannot do this to people. Where you understand the nature's law, it's not worthwhile. And the whole of the cultivation is just so simple. When you understand this clearly through right view, the law of karma, the law of dependent origin, the four noble truths, You cannot break them. You cannot violate them. You will never, never do anything that is negative towards your karmic nature. You will just cultivate and develop your understanding. And through that, your spiritual nature also evolves. When your spiritual nature evolves, your karmic nature becomes beautiful. So that in future, when you have to come or choose to come every life, you will have this Dhamma understanding and you will become beautiful. Then life becomes meaningful. That's why it's not about this life alone. It's about all of your future life if you choose to come or have to come. Okay? I hope you understand. Sahada, sahada, sahada. It's nothing complicated. The Buddha Dhamma, the teaching is very simple. You only need to understand it. The moment you understand, you reflect, you contemplate until very clear, then you realize it's foolish to go against all this. Because these are nature's law. Understand? It's not worthwhile to be selfish, to be greedy, to have emotional negativity, to have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow. All these are negative mind state, wrong thought. Means you don't know how to use this tool that is endowed, given to you by nature. You use it with delusion, with heedlessness. That's why you don't know how to use your form and mind. Always remember this is not you, but karmically conditioned are a tool and a vehicle for you to come to this world, to live life, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. That's why use it properly for the good of the many, to develop your karmic nature, your spiritual nature, and not to be heedless anymore. Is the message clear? Yeah? Oh, still not clear. It's not clear, means I leave it to you, because your life, you decide how you want to live. I will you. Day one, I will never turn back. That's why in the year 1971, 45 years ago, the moment I understood this vulnerable truth, I never turned back. Not to say I understood. I heard about it. I read about it in a book. Then nobody taught me. Then I knew this is it. No need to search. And inside, deep inside, I want to realize this understanding, this teaching. I will never turn back. Because this is so important to me. My whole existence, not only this life, all of the future coming. Without this understanding, living being will become afflicted, suffer, miserable. Okay? Yeah. Okay, do you have any more questions? Otherwise we can stop. Huh?
Just end here, since there's no question. So sadhu to you, Brother Teo, for sharing with us your knowledge. Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Just a token of appreciation for all your effort. And
I will have to hand this to Mimi. Huh? She fetched me with the sun. Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I donate back to the temple. There's a box there, a donation box. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, then maybe we will do a quick sharing of merits and transform merits, then you make your aspiration. Okay, recall to mind all of the wholesomeness and the meritorious action that we have developed over the past 2 hours plus. Oh, not yet 2 hours, almost 2 hours. Okay, over the last 1 hour plus. Then we shall share all these merits and wholesomeness with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyang Pang Anamodhitwa Chirang Rakkantu Loka Sasada Itta Vata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampada Sabbe Deva Kantu Sabba Sampati Siddhya Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sukita Hontu Nyatayo Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sukita Hontu Nyatayo Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sukita Hontu Nyatayo Imina Punyang Kamina Mame Bala Samagamo Satang Samagamo Hotu Yawa Nivana Patiya Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Keep in respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and other worthy ones.